Dhritarashtra said, O Master of Charity, I can never be satiated while hearing your auspicious words. Indeed, I am like a mortal who has obtained the nectar of the gods. Even so, gentle Akura, because my unsteady heart is prejudiced by affection for my sons, these pleasing words of yours cannot remain fixed there, just as lightning cannot remain fixed in a cloud. Who can defy the injunctions of the Supreme Lord, who has now descended in the Yadu dynasty to diminish the earth's burden? I offer my obeisances to him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who creates this universe by the inconceivable activity of his material energy, and then distributes the various modes of nature by entering within the creation. From him, the meaning of whose pastimes is unfathomable, come both the entangling cycle of birth and death, and the process of deliverance from it. Shukadeva Goswami said, having thus surprised himself of the king's attitude, Akura, the descendant of Yadu, took permission from his well-wishing relatives and friends and returned to the capital of the Yadavas. Akura reported to Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna how Dhritarashtra was behaving toward the Pandavas. Thus, O descendant of the Kurus, he fulfilled the purpose for which he had been sent. Chapter 50, Krishna establishes the city of Dwarka. Shukadeva Goswami said, when Kamsa was killed, O heroic descendant of Bharat, his two queens, Asti and Prapti, went to their father's house in great distress. The sorrowful queens told their father, King Jarasandha of Magadha, all about how they had become widows. Hearing this odious news, Jarasandha was filled with sorrow and anger, and he began the greatest possible endeavor to rid the earth of the Yadavas. With a force of 23 Akshauhini divisions, he laid siege to the Yadu capital, Mathura, on all sides. Although Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the original cause of this world, when he descended to the earth, he played the role of a human being. Thus, when he saw Jarasandha's assembled army surrounding his city like a great ocean overflowing its shores, and when he saw how this army was striking fear into his subjects, the Lord considered what his suitable response should be according to the time, place, and specific purpose of his current incarnation. The Lord thought, since it is such a burden on the earth, I will destroy Jarasandha's army, consisting of Akshauhinis of foot soldiers, horses, chariots, and elephants, which the king of Magadha has assembled from all subservient kings and brought together here. But Jarasandha himself should not be killed, since in the future he will certainly assemble another army. This is the purpose of my present incarnation, to relieve the earth of its burden, protect the pious, and kill the impious. I also assume other bodies to protect religion and to end irreligion whenever it flourishes in the course of time. Shukadeva Goswami continued, as Lord Govinda was thinking in this way, two chariots as effulgent as the sun suddenly descended from the sky. They were complete with drivers and equipment. The Lord's eternal divine weapons also appeared before him spontaneously. Seeing these, Sri Krishna, Lord of the senses, addressed Lord Sankarsan. My respected elder brother, see this danger which has beset your dependents, the Yadus, and see, dear master, how your personal chariot and favorite weapons have come before you. The purpose for which we have taken birth, my lord, is to secure the welfare of our devotees. Please now remove from the earth the burden of these 23 armies. After Lord Krishna had thus invited his brother, the two lords, wearing armor and displaying their resplendent weapons, drove out of the city in their chariots. Only a very small contingent of soldiers accompanied them. As Lord Krishna came out of the city with Dwarka at the reins of his chariot, he blew his conch shell, and the enemy soldiers' hearts began to tremble with fear. Jarasandha looked at the two of them and said, O Krishna, lowest of men, I do not wish to fight alone with you, since it would be a shame to fight with a mere boy. You fool who keep yourself hidden, O murderer of your relatives, go away. I will not fight with you. You, Rama, should gather your courage and fight with me, if you think you can do it. You may either give up your body when it is cut to pieces by my arrows, and thus attain to heaven, or else kill me. The Supreme Lord said, Real heroes do not simply boast, but rather show their prowess in action. We cannot take seriously the words of one who is full of anxiety and about to die. Shukadev Goswami said, Just as the wind covers the sun with clouds or a fire with dust, the son of Jara marched toward the two descendants of Madhu and with his huge assemblage of armies surrounded them and their soldiers, chariots, flags, horses, and charioteers. The women stood in the watchtowers, palaces, and high gates of the city. When they could no longer see Krishna's and Balaram's chariots, identified by banners marked with the emblems of Garuda and a palm tree, they were struck with grief and fainted. Seeing his army tormented by the relentless and savage rain of arrows from the massive opposing forces gathered like clouds about him, Lord Hari twanged his excellent bow, Shanga, which both gods and demons worship. Lord Krishna took arrows from his quiver, fixed them on the bowstring, pulled back, and released endless torrents of sharp shafts, which struck the enemy's chariots, elephants, horses, and infantrymen. The Lord shooting his arrows resembled a blazing circle of fire. Elephants fell to the ground, their foreheads split open. Cavalry horses fell with severed necks. Chariots fell with their horses, flags, drivers, and masters all shattered. And foot soldiers collapsed with severed arms, thighs, and shoulders. On the battlefield, hundreds of rivers of blood flowed from the limbs of the humans, elephants, and horses who had been cut to pieces. In these rivers, arms resembled snakes, human heads, turtles, dead elephants, islands, and dead horses, crocodiles. Hands and thighs appeared like fish, human hair like water weeds, bows like waves, and various weapons like clumps of bushes. The rivers of blood teemed with all of these. Chariot wheels looked like terrifying whirlpools, and precious gems and ornaments resembled stones and gravel in the rushing red rivers, which aroused fear in the timid, joy in the wise. With the blows of his plow weapon, the immeasurably powerful Lord Balaram destroyed Magadhendra's military force. And though this force was as unfathomable and fearsome as an impassable ocean, for the two sons of Vasudev, the lords of the universe, the battle was hardly more than play. For him who orchestrates the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the three worlds, and who possesses unlimited spiritual qualities, it is hardly amazing that he subdues an opposing party. Still, when the Lord does so, imitating human behavior, sages glorify his acts. Jarasandh, with his chariot lost and all his soldiers dead, was left with only his breath. At that point, Lord Balaram forcibly seized the powerful warrior, just as one lion takes hold of another. With the divine noose of Varuna and other mortal ropes, Balaram began tying up Jarasandh, who had killed so many foes. But Lord Govinda still had a purpose to fulfill through Jarasandh, and thus he asked Balaram to stop. Jarasandh, whom fighters had highly honored, was ashamed after being released by the two lords of the universe, and thus he decided to undergo penances. But on the road, several kings convinced him with both spiritual wisdom and mundane arguments that he should give up his idea of self-abnegation. They told him, Your defeat by the Yadus was simply the unavoidable reaction of your past karma. All of his armies having been killed, and himself neglected by the personality of Godhead, King Jarasandh, son of Bihadrata, then sadly returned to the kingdom of Magadha. Lord Mukunda had crossed the ocean of his enemy's armies with his own military force completely intact. He received congratulations from the denizens of heaven, who showered him with flowers. The people of Mathura, relieved of their feverish anxiety and filled with joy, came out to meet him as professional bards, heralds, and panegyrists sang in praise of his victory. As the Lord entered his city, conch shells and kettle drums sounded, and many drums, horns, veenas, flutes, and madangas played in concert. The boulevards were sprinkled with water, there were banners everywhere, and the gateways were decorated for the celebration. The citizens were elated, and the city resounded with the chanting of Vedic hymns. As the women of the city affectionately looked at the Lord, their eyes wide open with love. They scattered flower garlands, yogurt, parched rice, and newly grown sprouts upon him. Lord Krishna then presented to the Yadu king all the wealth that had fallen on the battlefield, namely the countless ornaments of the dead warriors. 17 times the king of Magadha met defeat in this very way, and yet throughout these defeats he fought on with his Akshauhini divisions against the forces of the Yadu dynasty, who were protected by Sri Krishna. By the power of Lord Krishna, the Vrishnis would invariably annihilate all of Jarasandha's forces, and when all his soldiers had been killed, the king, released by his enemies, would again go away. Just as the 18th battle was about to take place, a barbarian warrior named Kaliyavana, sent by Narada, appeared on the battlefield. Arriving at Mathura, this Yavana laid siege to the city with 30 million barbarian soldiers. He had never found a human rival worth fighting, but he had heard that the Vrishnis were his equals. When Lord Krishna and Lord Sankarshan saw Kaliyavana, Krishna thought about the situation and said, "Ah, a great danger now threatens the Yadus from two sides. This Yavana is besieging us already, and the mighty king of Magadha will soon arrive here, if not today, then tomorrow or the next day. If powerful Jarasandha comes while we two are busy fighting Kaliyavana, Jarasandha may kill our relatives or else take them away to his capital. Therefore, we will immediately construct a fortress that no human force can penetrate. Let us settle our family members there and then kill the barbarian king." After thus discussing the matter with Balaram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead had a fortress 12 yojanas in circumference built within the sea. Inside that fort, he had a city built containing all kinds of wonderful things. In the construction of that city could be seen the full scientific knowledge and architectural skill of Vishwakarma. There were wide avenues, commercial roads, and courtyards laid out on ample plots of land. There were splendid parks, and also gardens stocked with trees and creepers from the heavenly planets. The gateway towers were topped with golden turrets touching the sky, and their upper levels were fashioned of crystal quartz. The gold-covered houses were adorned in front with golden pots, and on top with jeweled roofs, and their floors were inlaid with precious emeralds. Beside the houses stood treasury buildings, warehouses, and stables for fine horses, all built of silver and brass. Each residence had a watchtower, and also a temple for its household deity. Filled with citizens of all four social orders, the city was especially beautified by the palaces of Sri Krishna, the Lord of the Yadus. Lord Indra brought Sri Krishna the Sudharma Assembly Hall, standing within which a mortal man is not subject to the laws of mortality. Indra also gave the Parijata tree. Lord Varuna offered horses as swift as the mind, some of which were pure dark blue, others white. The treasurer of the demigods, Kuvera, gave his 8 mystic treasures, and the rulers of various planets each presented their own opulences. The Supreme Lord having come to the earth, these demigods now offered him whatever powers of control he had previously delegated to them for the exercise of their particular authority. After transporting all his subjects to the new city by the power of his mystic Yogamaya, Lord Krishna consulted with Lord Balaram, who had remained in Mathura to protect it. Then, wearing a garland of lotuses but bearing no weapons, Lord Krishna went out of Mathura by its main gate. Chapter 51, The Deliverance of Muchukunda. Shukadev Goswami said, "Kaliyavana saw the Lord come out from Mathura like the rising moon. The Lord was most beautiful to behold, with his dark blue complexion and yellow silk garment. Upon his chest he bore the mark of Shivats, and the Kaustubha gem adorned his neck. His forearms were sturdy and long. He displayed his ever-joyful lotus-like face, with eyes pink like lotuses, beautifully effulgent cheeks, a pristine smile, and glittering shark-shaped earrings." The barbarian thought, "This person must indeed be Vasudev, since he possesses the characteristics Narada mentioned. He is marked with Shivats, He has four arms, his eyes are like lotuses, he wears a garland of forest flowers, and he is extremely handsome. He cannot be anyone else. Since he goes on foot and unarmed, I will fight him without weapons." Resolving thus, Kaliyavana ran after the Lord, who turned his back and ran away. Kaliyavana hoped to catch Lord Krishna, though great mystic yogis cannot attain him. Appearing virtually within reach of Kaliyavana's hands at every moment, Lord Hari led the king of the Yavanas far away to a mountain cave. While chasing the Lord, the Yavana cast insults at him, saying, "You took birth in the Yadu dynasty. It's not proper for you to run away." But still, Kaliyavana could not reach Lord Krishna because his sinful reactions had not been cleansed away. Although insulted in this way, the Supreme Lord entered the mountain cave. Kaliyavana also entered, and there he saw another man lying asleep. "So, after leading me such a long distance, now he is lying here like some saint." Thus thinking the sleeping man to be Lord Krishna, the deluded fool kicked him with all his strength. The man awoke after a long sleep and slowly opened his eyes. Looking all about, he saw Kaliyavana standing beside him. The awakened man was angry and cast his glance at Kaliyavana, whose body burst into flames. In a single moment, Kaliyavana was burnt to ashes. King Parikshit said, "Who was that person, O Brahman? To which family did he belong, and what were his powers? Why did that destroyer of the barbarian lie down to sleep in the cave, and whose son was he?" Shukadeva Goswami said, "Muchukunda was the name of this great personality, who was born in the Ikshvaku dynasty as the son of Mandata. He was devoted to Brahminical culture and always true to his vow in battle. Begged by Indra and the other demigods to help protect them when they were terrorized by the demons, Muchukunda defended them for a long time. When the demigods obtained Kartikeya as their general, they told Muchukunda, 'O king, you may now give up your troublesome duty of guarding us. Abandoning an unopposed kingdom in the world of men, O valiant one, you neglected all your personal desires while engaged in protecting us. The children, queens, relatives, ministers, advisors, and subjects who were your contemporaries are now no longer alive. They have all been swept away by time. Inexhaustible time, stronger than the strong, is the supreme personality of Godhead himself. Like a herdsman moving his animals along, he moves mortal creatures as his pastime. All good fortune to you. Now please choose a benediction from us. Anything but liberation, since only the infallible Supreme Lord, Vishnu, can bestow that.' The king, exhausted by his labor, then chose sleep as his benediction. He further stated, 'O best of the demigods, may whoever disturbs my sleep be immediately burned to ashes.' The demigods replied, 'So be it,' and told him, 'That insensitive person who wakes you in the middle of your sleep will immediately turn to ashes simply by your seeing him.' Thus King Muchukunda took his respectful leave of the demigods and went to a cave, where he lay down to enjoy the sleep they had granted him. After the Yavana was burnt to ashes, the Supreme Lord Krishna revealed himself to the wise Muchukunda. As he gazed at the Lord, King Muchukunda saw that he was dark blue like a cloud, had four arms, and wore a yellow silk garment. On his chest he bore the Shiva's mark, and on his neck the brilliantly glowing Kaustubha gem. Adorned with a Vaijayanti garland, the Lord displayed his handsome, peaceful face, which attracts the eyes of all mankind with its shark-shaped earrings and affectionately smiling glance. The beauty of his youthful form was unexcelled, and he moved with the nobility of an angry lion. The highly intelligent king was overwhelmed by the Lord's effulgence, which showed him to be invincible. Expressing his uncertainty, Muchukunda hesitantly questioned Lord Krishna as follows: 'Who are you who have come to this mountain cave in the forest, having walked on the thorny ground with feet as soft as lotus petals? Perhaps you are the potency of all potent beings, or maybe you are the powerful god of fire, or the sun god, the moon god, the king of heaven, or the ruling demigod of some other planet. I think you are the supreme personality among the three chief gods, since you drive away the darkness of this cave as a lamp dispels darkness with its light. O best among men, if you like, please truly describe your birth, activities, and lineage to us, who are eager to hear. As for ourselves, O tiger among men, we belong to a family of fallen Kshatriyas, descendants of King Ikshvaku. My name is Muchukunda, my lord, and I am the son of Yovanashva. I was fatigued after remaining awake for a long time, and my senses were overwhelmed by sleep. Thus I slept comfortably here in this solitary place until, just now, someone woke me. The man who woke me was burned to ashes by the reaction of his sins. Just then I saw you, possessing a glorious appearance and the power to chastise your enemies. Your unbearably brilliant effulgence overwhelms our strength, and thus we cannot fix our gaze upon you. O Exalted One, you are to be honored by all embodied beings. Shukadeva Goswami continued, thus addressed by the King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, origin of all creation, smiled and then replied to him in a voice as deep as the rumbling of clouds. My dear friend, I have taken thousands of births, lived thousands of lives, and accepted thousands of names. In fact, my births, activities, and names are limitless, and thus even I cannot count them. After many lifetimes, someone might count the dust particles on the earth, but no one can ever finish counting my qualities, activities, names, and births. O King, the greatest sages enumerate my births and activities, which take place throughout the three phases of time, but never do they reach the end of them. Nonetheless, O friend, I will tell you about my current birth, name, and activities. Kindly hear. Some time ago, Lord Brahma requested me to protect religious principles and destroy the demons who were burdening the earth. Thus, I descended in the Yadu dynasty, in the home of Anakadundubi. Indeed, because I am the son of Vasudev, people call me Vasudev. I have killed Kalaneni, reborn as Kamsa, as well as Talamba and other enemies of the pious. And now, O King, this barbarian has been burnt to ashes by your piercing glance. Since in the past you repeatedly prayed to me, I have personally come to this cave to show you mercy, for I am affectionately inclined to my devotees. Now choose some benedictions from me, O saintly King. I will fulfill all your desires. One who has satisfied me need never again lament. Shukadev Goswami said, Muchukunda bowed down to the Lord when he heard this. Remembering the words of the sage Garga, he joyfully recognized Krishna to be the Supreme Lord Narayan. The King then addressed him as follows. Shri Muchukunda Huvacha Vimohito Yam Jana Ishmaya Chadiyaya Tam Nabajatyanatadri Sukhaya Dukkha Dabaveshu Sanjati Kriheshu Yoshi Purushascha Vanchitaha Lambhajano Durlabhamatta Manusham Katam Charabhyam Gamayatnato Naga Bhadaravindam Nabajatya Sanmati Krahanda Kupi Patito Yatabashu Namaisya Kalo Chita Nispalo Gato Rajasya Yonam Namadasya Bhupati Matyatma Buddhi Sutadara Khoshabu Sasanja Manasya Dodanda Chindaya. Sri Muchukunda said, O Lord, the people of this world, both men and women, are bewildered by your illusory energy. Unaware of their real benefit, they do not worship you, but instead seek happiness by entangling themselves in family affairs, which are actually sources of misery. That person has an impure mind, who despite having somehow or other automatically obtained the rare and highly evolved human form of life, does not worship your lotus feet. Like an animal that has fallen into a blind well, such a person has fallen into the darkness of a material home. I have wasted all this time, O unconquerable one, becoming more and more intoxicated by my domain and opulence as an earthly king, misidentifying the mortal body as the self, becoming attached to children, wives, treasury, and land. I suffered endless anxiety. With deep arrogance, I took myself to be the body, which is a material object like a pot or a wall. Thinking myself a god among men, I traveled the earth surrounded by my charioteers, elephants, cavalry, foot soldiers, and generals, disregarding you in my deluding pride. A man obsessed with thoughts of what he thinks needs to be done, intensely greedy, and delighting in sense enjoyment, is suddenly confronted by you, who are ever alert. Like a hungry snake licking its fangs before a mouse, you appear before him as death. The body that at first rides high on fierce elephants or chariots adorned with gold and is known by the name King, is later, by your invincible power of time, called feces, worms, or ashes. Having conquered the entire circle of directions and being thus free of conflict, a man sits on a splendid throne, receiving praise from leaders who were once his equals. But when he enters the women's chambers, where sex pleasure is found, he is led about like a pet animal, O Lord. A king who desires even greater power than he already has, strictly performs his duties, carefully practicing austerity and foregoing sense enjoyment. But he whose urges are so rampant, thinking I am independent and supreme, cannot attain happiness. When the material life of a wandering soul has ceased, O Achyuta, he may attain the association of your devotees. And when he associates with them, there awakens in him devotion unto you, who are the goal of the devotees and the lord of all causes and their effects. My lord, I think you have shown me mercy, since my attachment to my kingdom has spontaneously ceased. Such freedom is prayed for by saintly rulers of vast empires who desire to enter the forest for a life of solitude. O all-powerful one, I desire no boon other than service to your lotus feet, the boon most eagerly sought by those free of material desire. O Hari, what enlightened person who worships you, the giver of liberation, would choose a boon that causes his own bondage? Therefore, O Lord, having put aside all objects of material desire, which are bound to the modes of passion, ignorance, and goodness, I am approaching you, the supreme personality of Godhead, for shelter. You are not covered by mundane designations. Rather, you are the supreme absolute truth, full in pure knowledge and transcendental to the material modes. For so long I have been pained by troubles in this world and have been burning with lamentation. My six enemies are never satiated, and I can find no peace. Therefore, O giver of shelter, O supreme soul, please protect me. O Lord, in the midst of danger, I have by good fortune approached your lotus feet, which are the truth, and which thus make one fearless and free of sorrow. The supreme lord said, O emperor, great ruler, your mind is pure and potent. Though I enticed you with benedictions, your mind was not overcome by material desires. Understand that I enticed you with benedictions just to prove that you would not be deceived. The intelligence of my unalloyed devotees is never diverted by material blessings. The minds of non-devotees who engage in such practices as pranayama are not fully cleansed of material desires. Thus, O King, material desires are again seen to arise in their minds. Wander this earth at will, with your mind fixed on me. May you always possess such unfailing devotion for me. Because you followed the principles of a Kshatriya, you killed living beings while hunting and performing other duties. You must vanquish the sins thus incurred by carefully executing penances while remaining surrendered to me. O King, in your very next life you will become an excellent Brahmin, the greatest well-wisher of all creatures, and certainly come to me alone. Chapter 52, Rukmini's Message to Lord Krishna. Shukadev Goswami said, My dear King, thus graced by Lord Krishna, Muchukunda circumambulated him and bowed down to him. Then Muchukunda, the beloved descendant of Ikshvaku, exited through the mouth of the cave. seeing that the size of all the human beings, animals, trees, and plants were severely reduced, and thus realizing that the age of Kali was at hand, Muchukunda left for the north. The sober king, beyond material association and free of doubt, was convinced of the value of austerity. Absorbing his mind in Lord Krishna, he came to Gandhamadana Mountain. There he arrived at Bhadarik Ashram, the abode of Lord Naranarayan, where, remaining tolerant of all dualities, he peacefully worshipped the Supreme Lord Hari by performing severe austerities. The Lord returned to Mathura, which was still surrounded by Yavanas. Then he destroyed the army of barbarians and began taking their valuables to Dwarka. As the wealth was being carried by oxen and men under Lord Krishna's direction, Jarasandha appeared at the head of 23 armies. O king, seeing the fierce waves of the enemy's army, Krishna and Balaram, imitating human behavior, ran swiftly away. Abandoning the abundant riches, fearless but feigning fear, they went many yojanas on their lotus-like feet. When he saw them fleeing, powerful Jarasandha laughed loudly and then pursued them with charioteers and foot soldiers. He could not understand the exalted position of the two lords. Apparently exhausted after fleeing a long distance, the two lords climbed a high mountain named Pravarshana, upon which Lord Indra showers incessant rain. Although he knew they were hiding on the mountain, Jarasandha could find no trace of them. Therefore, he placed firewood on all sides and set the mountain ablaze. The two lords then suddenly jumped from the burning mountain, which was 11 yojanas high, and fell to the ground. Unseen by their opponent or his followers, those two most exalted Yadus returned to their city of Dwarka, which had the ocean as a protective moat. Jarasandha mistakenly thought that Balaram and Kesava had burned to death in the fire. Thus he withdrew his vast military force and returned to the Magadha kingdom. As ordered by Lord Brahma, Raivata, the opulent ruler of Anarta, gave Lord Balaram his daughter Raivati in marriage. This has already been discussed. O hero among the Kurus, the Supreme Lord himself, Govinda, married Bhishmika's daughter Vaidarbhi, who was the direct expansion of the goddess of fortune. The Lord did this by her desire, and in the process he beat down Shalva and other kings who took Shishupal's side. Indeed, as everyone watched, Sri Krishna took Rukmini just as Garuda boldly stole nectar from the demigods. King Parikshit said, "The Supreme Lord married Rukmini, the beautiful-faced daughter of Bhishmika, in the Rakshasa style, or so I have heard. My Lord, I wish to hear how the immeasurably powerful Lord Krishna took away his bride while defeating such kings as Magadha and Shalva. What experienced listener, O Brahman, could ever grow satiated while listening to the pious, charming, and ever-fresh topics of Lord Krishna, which cleanse away the world's contamination?" Sri Badaraini said, "There was a king named Bhishmika, the powerful ruler of Vidarbha. He had 5 sons and 1 daughter of lovely countenance. Rukmi was the firstborn son, followed by Rukmarata, Rukmabahu, Rukmakesh, and Rukmamali. Their sister was the exalted Rukmini. Hearing of the beauty, prowess, transcendental character, and opulence of Mukunda from visitors to the palace who sang his praises, Rukmini decided that he would be the perfect husband for her. Lord Krishna knew that Rukmini possessed intelligence, auspicious bodily markings, beauty, proper behavior, and all other good qualities. Concluding that she would be an ideal wife for him, he made up his mind to marry her. Because Rukmini envied the Lord, he forbade his family members to give his sister to Krishna, although they wanted to. Instead, Rukmini decided to give Rukmini to Shishupal. Dark-eyed Vaidarbhi was aware of this plan, and it deeply upset her. Analyzing the situation, she quickly sent a trustworthy Brahmin to Krishna. Upon reaching Dwarka, the Brahmin was brought inside by the gatekeepers and saw the primeval personality of Godhead sitting on a golden throne. Seeing the Brahmin, Sri Krishna, Lord of the Brahmins, came down from his throne and seated him. Then the Lord worshipped him just as he himself is worshipped by the demigods. After the Brahman had eaten and rested, Sri Krishna, the goal of saintly devotees, came forward and while massaging the Brahman's feet with his own hands, he patiently questioned him as follows. O best of exalted Brahmins, are your religious practices, sanctioned by senior authorities, proceeding without great difficulty? Is your mind always fully satisfied? When a Brahman is satisfied with whatever comes his way and does not fall away from his religious duties, those very religious principles become his desire cow, fulfilling all his wishes. An unsatisfied Brahman wanders restlessly from one planet to another, even if he becomes king of heaven. But a satisfied Brahman, though he may possess nothing, rests peacefully, all his limbs free of distress. I repeatedly bow my head in respect to those Brahmins who are satisfied with their lot. Saintly, prideless, and peaceful, they are the best well-wishers of all living beings. O Brahman, is your king attending to your welfare? Indeed, that king in whose country the citizens are happy and protected is very dear to me. Whence have you come, crossing the impassable sea, and for what purpose? Explain all this to us if it is not a secret, and tell us what we may do for you. Thus questioned by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who incarnates to perform his pastimes, the Brahman told him everything. Shri Rukmini Uvacha Shrutva Gunanva Vana Sundada Sinvratanti Nivishikana Divarai Hadatonga Tapam Rupam Drisham Drishimetamati Lata Labham Dvayachita Vishati Chittama Patrapame Katva Mukunda Mahati Kulashila Rupa Vindavayoda Vinadama Diratma Tulyam Dhirapatim kulavati navanita kanya ghali nisinda nala loka manobiramam Dhanne bhavam kulubhatak pacharanga jayam Atma pitascha bhavato cha vibho videhi Ma viram bhagam abhimashtu chayja arad Goma yuvan vigapate babam hambu jaksha Sri Rukmini said in her letter, as read by the Brahman, O beauty of the worlds, having heard of your qualities, which enter the ears of those who hear and remove their bodily distress, and having also heard of your beauty, which fulfills all the visual desires of those who see, I have fixed my shameless mind upon you, O Krishna. O Mukunda, you are equal only to yourself in lineage, character, beauty, knowledge, youthfulness, wealth, and influence. O lion among men, you delight the minds of all mankind. What aristocratic, sober-minded, and marriageable girl of a good family would not choose you as her husband when the proper time has come? Therefore, my dear Lord, I have chosen you as my husband, and I surrender myself to you. Please come swiftly, O Almighty One, and make me your wife. My dear lotus-eyed Lord, let Shishupal never touch the hero's portion like a jackal stealing the property of a lion. If I have sufficiently worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead by pious works, sacrifices, charity, rituals, and vows, and also by worshipping the demigods, Brahmins, and gurus, then may Gadaguja come and take my hand, and not Dhammaghosha's son or anyone else. O unconquerable one, tomorrow when my marriage ceremony is about to begin, you should arrive unseen in Vidarbha and surround yourself with the leaders of your army. Then crush the forces of Chaidya and Magadendra and marry me in a Rakshasa style, winning me with your valor. Since I will be staying within the inner chambers of the palace, you may wonder, how can I carry you away without killing some of your relatives? But I shall tell you a way. On the day before the marriage, there is a grand procession to honor the royal family's deity. And in this procession, the new bride goes outside the city to visit Goddess Girija. O lotus-eyed one, great souls like Lord Shiva hanker to bathe in the dust of your lotus feet and thereby destroy their ignorance. If I cannot obtain your mercy, I shall simply give up my vital force, which will have become weak from the severe penances I will perform. Then, after hundreds of lifetimes of endeavor, I may obtain your mercy. The Brahmin said, This is the confidential message I have brought with me, O Lord of the Yadus. Please consider what must be done in these circumstances and do it at once. Chapter 53 Krishna Kidnaps Rukmini. Shukadev Goswami said, Thus hearing the confidential message of Princess Vaidarbhi, Lord Yadunandana took the Brahmin's hand and, smiling, spoke to him as follows. Just as Rukmini's mind is fixed on me, my mind is fixed on her. I can't even sleep at night. I know that Rukmi, out of envy, has forbidden our marriage. She has dedicated herself exclusively to me, and her beauty is flawless. I will bring her here after thrashing those worthless kings in battle, just as one brings a blazing flame out of firewood. Shukadev Goswami said, Lord Madhusudana also understood the exact lunar time for Rukmini's wedding. Thus he told his driver, Dwarka, ready my chariot immediately. Dwarka brought the Lord's chariot, yoked with the horses named Shaibya, Sugriva, Meghapushpa, and Balahaka. He then stood before Lord Krishna with joined palms. Lord Shauri mounted his chariot and had the Brahmin do likewise. Then the Lord's swift horses took them from the Anarta district to Vaidarbha in a single night. King Bhishmaka, the master of Kundina, having succumbed to the sway of affection for his son, was about to give his daughter to Shishupal. The king saw to all the required preparations. The king had the main avenues, commercial roads, and intersections thoroughly cleaned and then sprinkled with water. And he also had the city decorated with triumphant archways and multicolored banners on poles. The men and women of the city, arrayed in spotless raiment and anointed with fragrant sandalwood paste, wore precious necklaces, flower garlands, and jeweled ornaments, and their opulent homes were filled with the aroma of a guru. In accordance with prescribed rituals, Maharaj Bhishmaka worshipped the forefathers, demigods, and Brahmins, feeding them all properly. Then he had the traditional mantras chanted for the well-being of the bride. The bride cleaned her teeth and bathed, after which she put on the auspicious wedding necklace. Then she was dressed in brand new upper and lower garments and adorned with the most excellent jeweled ornaments. The best of Brahmins chanted mantras of the Rig, Sama, and Yajurvedas for the bride's protection, and the priest learned in the Atharva Veda offered oblations to pacify the controlling planets. Outstanding in his knowledge of regulative principles, the king rewarded the Brahmins with gold, silver, clothing, cows, and sesame seeds mixed with raw sugar. King Damagosh, lord of Chedi, had also engaged Brahmins expert in chanting mantras to perform all rituals necessary to assure his son's prosperity. King Damagosh traveled to Kundina accompanied by armies of elephants exuding mada, chariots hung with golden chains, and numerous cavalry and infantry soldiers. Bhishmaka, the lord of Vidarbha, came out of the city and met King Damagosh, offering him tokens of respect. Bhishmaka then settled Damagosh in a residence especially constructed for the occasion. Shishupal's supporters, Shalva, Jarasandh, Dantavakra, and Vidurata, all came, along with Poundrika and thousands of other kings. To secure the bride for Shishupal, the kings who envied Krishna and Balaram came to the following decision among themselves. If Krishna comes here with Balaram and the other Yadus to steal the bride, we shall band together and fight him. Thus those envious kings went to the wedding with their entire armies and a full complement of military conveyances. When Lord Balaram heard about these preparations of the inimical kings and how Lord Krishna had set off alone to steal the bride, he feared that a fight would ensue. Immersed in affection for his brother, he hurried to Kundina with a mighty army consisting of infantry and of soldiers riding on elephants, horses, and chariots. The lovely daughter of Bhishmaka anxiously awaited the arrival of Krishna, but when she did not see the Brahmin return, she thought as follows. Alas, my wedding is to take place when the night ends. How unlucky I am. Lotus-eyed Krishna does not come. I don't know why. And even the Brahmin messenger has not yet returned. Perhaps the faultless Lord, even while preparing to come here, saw something contemptible in me, and therefore has not come to take my hand. I am extremely unfortunate, for the Creator is not favorably disposed toward me, nor is the great Lord Shiva. Perhaps Lord Shiva's wife Devi, who is known as Gauri, Rudrani, Girija, and Sati, has turned against me. As she thought in this way, the young maiden, whose mind had been stolen by Krishna, closed her tear-filled eyes, remembering that there was still time. O King, as the bride thus awaited the arrival of Govinda, she felt a twitch in her left thigh, arm, and eye. This was a sign that something desirable would happen. Just then, that purest of learned Brahmins, following Krishna's order, came to see the divine Princess Rukmini within the inner chambers of the palace. Noting the Brahmin's joyful face and serene movements, saintly Rukmini, who could expertly interpret such symptoms, inquired from him with a pure smile. The Brahmin announced to her the arrival of Lord Yadunandana and relayed the Lord's promise to marry her. Princess Vaidarbhi was overjoyed to learn of Krishna's arrival. Not finding anything at hand suitable to offer the Brahmin, she simply bowed down to him.